Freedom Religion versus McCallum, Mr. Bolton. Quite a windup.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rich Bolton, and with me is Richard Heineman. Our position in today's case is, in many respects, very simple. We respectfully disagree with the district court's construction and application of the Supreme Court's recent Zelman decision and the other cases that have been, for shorthand purposes, described as the Supreme Court's independent private choice cases. It is, in a nutshell, what I think the district judge did.
I have trouble seeing, actually, the difference between this and the voucher case.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I have trouble seeing the difference between this and the voucher case.
Okay.
It's just the same sort of thing. If some function is privatized or open to private competitors, then the fact that a religious group is the one that offers the most attractive program, so that's what people choose, well, that's just, you know, that's Zelman.
The difference, Your Honor, and this is a difference that I think is derived from Zelman itself in the voucher case, is that in the true voucher case, for instance, the school funding case in Zelman, there was no other active government endorsement of the individuals of the religious program.
It's the same thing here. There's accreditation. If they accredit Catholic schools, and then public funds are used to enable people to go to those schools, it's exactly the same as this case, seems to me.
Well, it would be the same if, for instance, the Cleveland School District had prior contractual relationships with certain schools, set aside a certain amount of money for certain schools that would be that they could draw upon on a fee-for-service basis. It would be the same if the Cleveland School District...
I don't see what difference it makes whether they give the money to the parents directly. I mean, this is obviously dealing with prisoners. Can't have quite the same contractual structure.
The contractual... Well...
I'm not going to give the prisoners the money to buy the halfway house service.
In the... I think the contractual relationship is very important. In the... what the courts have called the true independent...
Well, let me ask you this way. Tell me, what would be a program similar to this that would pass constitutional muster, in your view?
I think if you had a program where, in many respects, I suppose if it was more like a Medicaid-type provider program where you did not have a pre-existing relationship where the government has pre-selected the provider. So I think if you had a system where the individuals, whether the money goes to the individual and then is not as important as that the individual, the relationship between the service provider and the service beneficiary, that's where the direct contractual relationship is. Here, for instance, the contractual relationship and the service provider's obligations are to the state. because of the contractual relationship that they have. They don't have, the contractual relationship is not with the service beneficiary. In all the true private choice cases...
Wait a second. We're talking about prisoners. So I wanted you to, maybe you don't think it's possible to have religious groups involved in this rehabilitation of prisoners. But putting that aside, how would you design this program? It can't be like Medicaid in the sense that you have the prisoners. They're not symmetrical with the patients. So how would you design this program in a way that would make it constitutional?
Well,
redesign this program.
The significance of their being prisoners is, the suggestion is that there are certain penological barriers to giving them free choice, you know, just an unlimited choice of providers.
I'm asking you a question. How would you, maybe you think that it's impossible to allow religious groups to be involved in prisoner rehabilitation, but setting that aside, how would you design this program so that it was constitutional?
I think if you have it set up so that the funds are available for a specified amount to the individuals, and they can choose.
Oh please! We already agree. We're not going to put the money into the hands of the prisoners.
I'm not saying that it has to be.
Well, would you tell me then what would be a feasible a program that would be constitutional if you think there is such a possibility here? You think it's a sine qua non that the prisoners get the money in their hands, then that's another way of saying, well, it's just not feasible.
No, I'm not saying that it has to be physically in their
then
hands.
Explain,
but I'm saying,
you know,
that
what it has to how it has to be done.
The program has to have some set value of services that they can draw upon. And then the individuals can, whether you give them the check or they tell you where to send it, as the court has said in terms of just the check, you know, payroll check deduction, they can choose from among the service providers.
Well,
that
they do choose.
Pardon?
They do choose these prisoners.
They choose from a panel that is pre-selected.
Well, you have to have eligibility standards. You have that with Medicaid.
This is not just an eligibility. This is not just this in a certification context. You do not set up pre-existing contractual relationships where the state specifies what the deliverables will be and sets aside a pot of money.
I don't understand. That's exactly what it does with schools. Private schools have to guarantee certain services, certain, otherwise they don't get accredited, and it's the same. Why is this any different?
This is not simply an accrediting. The contractual relationship here is not simply an accrediting. They are. It's a procurement
they
process.
Are paying. I mean, but that gets back to this question: does the money have to come out of the pocket of the prisoner?
I'm not saying it has to come out.
So why isn't it the equivalent of accreditation to say, yes, we'll enter into a contract with any group, secular or religious, that satisfies certain minima, which are adopted without regard to religion? Why isn't that just accreditation?
But that isn't the that isn't the relationship that we have in this case.
Well, what do they do different from what I just said?
First of all, the process of getting chosen. I mean, it's not simply with a typical accreditation. You've got certain very precise standards, very objective standards, and here the procurement process itself is what it gives rise to, where the government is involved in the selection of the service providers. The problem that arises is that then it becomes, with limited resources, it becomes beneficial and worthwhile for different religious providers to compete and to try to persuade the government, choose me over some other, and you get the sort of religious conflict that this country has historically.
I thought the prisoners were choosing. I don't understand you.
Pardon me?
I thought the prisoners were choosing.
Well,
I mean, are you saying they've jiggered the accreditation standards in such a way as to give a preference to religious groups?
I think that the procurement process that the DLC goes through in this case is not an objective accreditation process.
Does it favor religions?
I don't think you can say. Part of the problem is that, and as this court has recognized in other First Amendment cases, it's important that where the government is making selections like that, and the selection is to be, and there are certain prescribed bases for the selection, that you have easily enforceable and identifiable objective standards. Here, you've got a process where you've got
It's difficult to do with rehabilitation since there's so much uncertainty about how to rehabilitate criminals.
Well, you can certainly come closer to objective standards than having a process where a state senator has a meeting with the Secretary of the Department of Corrections, and then you get bid waivers for this program and no other. It's in the stipulated facts. There's never been any other service provider of this nature that has gotten bid waivers. So if you ask me, certainly there is a strong implication that the process is not objective, and it's certainly not what you would associate with an accreditation process. But the other thing that distinguishes this case from the voucher case is that you do not have, in the Cleveland school case, for instance, you do not have the school district saying, we recommend and think that the best choice for your child would be a particular religious school. And I think that type of, I mean, if certainly Zelman stands for the proposition that two things have to be satisfied. Number one, you have to have neutrality, and number two, you have to have the genuine private choice. And certainly, if Cleveland School District had said, you don't have to take my recommendation, but we, the school district, thinks that your child would be best suited by going to a particular religious school.
What if they just said SAT scores show that XYZ schools are the best in Cincinnati? Is that unconstitutional?
I think you're getting much closer to just to it being an objective recitation of just of historical facts. But as soon as you start interpreting the facts and making recommendations on that, you know, we think that the faith-based program is the one that is best suited for you. And that's the other thing that's important to recognize here, is that the district court found that this program has a faith component that is inseparable from the social services that are being provided. But as soon as the government...
It's also distinguishable from the other programs on some very important secular bases, isn't it? In terms of its length, in terms of the strictness of the regime involved?
Very, very much so.
All right. So, is there any dispute on this record that when the state recommended this program to some of the individuals, it did so on non-sectarian as opposed to sectarian basis?
Well, what we know, first of all, we were not allowed access to the individual participants in the program because of federal confidentiality requirements. But what we know from discovery of the provider and the state is that the state had a pot of money from that was actually ultimately from the federal government that they agreed to set aside for this program. But then they also encouraged probation and parole officers, because they wouldn't get the federal money unless they kept the slot filled. They encouraged people to slot offenders into the program. So
you mean to recommend?
Pardon?
You mean to recommend?
Direct them in?
Recommend.
I'm not hearing
you. You said slot them in.
Recommend.
Recommend, as that's your definition of slotting them in.
They would recommend and even
you use the term they slotted them in.
I'll use the term they use then. The terms that they have used.
Well, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I want to know exactly what you mean by slotting in.
Well, first of all,
if they think the program will fit the particular prisoner, and they recommend the program to them, in your opinion, that's slotting in.
Or?
No, that's a capable of yes or no.
Yes.
Okay.
I will also note that the record reflects that the probation and parole officers would try to direct individuals that they thought or knew to have a particular religious orientation into the program as well.
The record reflects that?
Pardon?
The record reflects that?
One of the stipulated facts indicated that the 75th stipulated finding of facts, that in the case of Faith Works, at least some DOC agents referred offenders that they previously knew to have a religious orientation, and that was among the stipulated facts.
If that's correct, what's wrong with it?
Well, to some extent, I mean, it goes back to an argument that we've also made that goes to the fundamental problem that we have with Judge Crabb's decision, is that it assumes that if there's not coercion, if the beneficiaries are receptive to the program, and if you're only preaching to the choir, if the government is only preaching to the choir, then there's no Establishment Clause violation. But it still gives the appearance of endorsement every bit
what
as much
as... What if the probation officer says to a criminal who has a drinking problem, I think you should, enroll in AA. Is that an unconstitutional act?
The reason I'm hesitating is the referral into an AA program, what I'm struggling with is in terms of the standing issue, since typically the AA is not government funded, it wouldn't necessarily pose a funding issue, but does it give the appearance of endorsement? I think it does.
Yeah, well, that strikes me as a really doctrinaire position. What harm is done in such a case from the standpoint of your client?
What harm would motivate
a lawsuit in a case that I just put, the probation officer who says, you should enroll in AA for your drinking problem?
I think
people litigate over such.
The problem is that what's happening, and we see this not only in the AA model, but also in various health models, so deliveries of health delivery care, we see a merging, an attempt to merge the secular and the sectarian, so that you get in a situation where the government is recommending. It would not be, in my opinion, any different than if he recommended that he go to church on Sunday.
It happens. This is, of course, a striking case for this. It's the religious group that's offering the best program, the longest program. So what are you going to say? Because it's the best, or because it's religious, it's to be excluded? Seems really perverse, given the country's crime problem.
Well, if we're going, if the government is going to integrate
what are you worried about? You're worried about thinning the ranks of atheist criminals? Is that the problem?
No, I think the problem is that, and we see this going on, and certainly discussions of it, that rather than, you say there's no other, for instance, the state argues that this program is really substantively no different than the secular programs except for the religious component and the length of the program. So if we say, that being the case, we'll choose to fund the longer religious program rather than make available longer-term secular programs. Through a procurement process, if the government put out a request...
Well, the secular groups want to offer the long program. There's nothing stopping them.
That's right.
So why are the religious people penalized because they're providing this social service at a more generous level than the secular
people? I don't think they are being penalized. They're being,
but the
state is recommending, and in my opinion, that
recommending because it's the best program.
Well, if we say that the government can recommend the religious program,
it's not recommending it because it's religious, but because they think, you know, everything considered, including the length, it's the best. Just as the way the probation officer might say, I don't care about the religious content of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's the best program, at least for some people. You wouldn't want to recommend a rabid atheist to it, but an ordinary person, probation officer, sizes up and says, this is best for you. I have trouble seeing what's wrong with something.
But that argument would also then support direct funding of faith-based organizations, because as long as the state says, well, the faith-based organization provides the best package of services, that same reasoning would say, forget whether that direct funding creates...
Well, that'd be the next step, but you could say, well, we want some insulation, so we want to make sure there's an element of personal choice here. Anyway, thank you very much. We'll hear from the other side. Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Your Honors. In the brief time available, I'd just like to focus on the independence and genuineness of the offender's choice. The essential facts in this case are that agents use their best judgments to match offenders to programs that best meet the offender's needs. And those needs are secular needs. A serious alcohol or drug problem that doesn't allow the person to function in the community unsupervised. Eligibility in this case to welfare to work benefits. And long-term homelessness, a lack of a stable residence.
What about the propensity of a particular individual toward rehabilitation on a religious basis? Your colleague says that that's a stipulated fact.
There is a stipulated fact that some agents referred people to Faith Works who they knew to have a previous religious orientation. That's all that we have about that in the record. I think the record also suggests that, even if that recommendation is made, it is has to be taken in context with the entire form of that recommendation, which is that I recommend Faith Works to you, but you should know it is a religious program. I can't force you to go. If you have an objection to it, I'll refer you to another to a secular program. I think that all taken together is less of a recommendation that this is the best option, for example, than just more like the menu of choices.
The state of Wisconsin supply chaplaincy services in its penal institutions?
I believe the state does, yes, Your Honor.
At any government expense?
I believe so, yes.
So it considers that the religious dimension of an inmate's life has something to do with rehabilitation?
As I understand it, chaplains are provided as an accommodation to the free exercise interests of inmates who are incarcerated and otherwise unable to express their religious
Certainly
orientation.
Certainly have the authority to eliminate from the prison setting any religious observance that would be counterproductive to the state's legitimate goal of rehabilitation, correct?
I assume that that's true.
You know what we're doing. Your point. I gather your point then is that if you have a person in this program who's going to dry out faster if there's a religious dimension, no reason why he can't be accommodated.
I think that's true. Though I think the record reflects that the reason that people are referred to Faith Works, the agents refer people to Faith Works, is because it best meets the offender's secular needs in terms
of... What about this stipulation? The stipulation seems to say that they also do take into consideration the faith dimension.
That is true.
Man, my point is that a big deal?
I wouldn't think so, Your Honor. safety.
I think maybe what Judge Ripple says, you can promote a secular goal, rehabilitation of criminals, with religious means.
You want to get to the finish line, right?
Right.
Well, dry the man out.
The point is rehabilitation of a person, certainly, and return to productive society.
So people get to the finish line faster using different aids.
That seems to be true, yes.
Okay. The state's not going to ignore the religious dimension of some inmates if it helps them get to the finish line faster.
If the inmate, or if the offender believes himself to be better served by a religious program, he should be given that option to make that choice for himself. I think where I might disagree with you a bit is the extent to which the state steers the inmate to that conclusion.
You're not disagreeing with me. I'm just posing the issue of trying to get a feel for whether this is really that extraordinary a situation for a state to engage in.
I wouldn't believe so.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And Mr. Kelly?
May it please the Court, my name is Daniel Kelly, and it is my honor to represent Faith Force Milwaukee. With me today is my co-counsel, Jordan Lawrence. I'd like to make simply 3 points this morning. The first is the recommendations that concern Freedom From Religion Foundation do not represent an endorsement of religion, nor does it have the principle of primary effect or purpose of advancing religion. Secondly, the programs are, from a constitutional standpoint, indistinguishable. There is no requirement that every single program that is available to an offender have identical aspects and identical provisions. Third point is that there is the current policy in place in the Department of Corrections, implemented in 2001, supersedes to a large extent the 1999 policy. That is one that the court should be considering. Does not make reference to recommendations.
So let me add, there's something puzzling in the record here, in the briefs, FaithWorks hasn't received any referrals recently? What's that situation?
That's correct, Judge Posner. As a result of this litigation, the Department of Corrections has suspended making any recommendations.
Oh, because of the litigation?
That's correct.
Does that mean your facility is empty? Because they're only there for, 9 months?
My understanding is that currently the facility is empty.
Excuse me?
My understanding is the facility currently is empty. That's correct.
It's empty?
Yes.
Wow.
The starting with the point that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has made, they appear to be concerned about the recommendations that a parole officer makes. We understand from McCune v. Lyle, the Supreme Court decided last year, that it is appropriate to take into consideration that a penological context is going to be different from any other context. And the state can relate to offenders in a way that wouldn't necessarily be appropriate for them to relate to others. So an indirect funding program in a penological context is not necessarily going to look precisely like a school voucher case. But in this case, in all relevant respects, this is Zelman. The point is funds make their way to FaithWorks only as a result of the genuinely independent private choice of individual offenders who decide that this is the best opportunity for them. One of the points that Freedom From Religion Foundation has brought up is that they are concerned that the FaithWorks program appears to be better. It is more effective, it is longer, and from that point they derive there must be some unconstitutional skewing going on because one program is superior to another. But Zelman dealt precisely with that issue. In that case, the school voucher program was instituted precisely because the public schools were failing in a particular city, and they wanted to make better programs available to the parents, and that's exactly what happened there. I think that's what happens here. There is an opportunity being given to offenders to decide, would this program work better for me? And I think as far as the recommendations go, I think they're entirely innocuous. In this case, because
is FaithWorks affiliated with a particular sect? Or
it is not. It is Christian.
It's Christian, but it's not. It doesn't It's not a branch of a particular church.
No, Your Honor. And as far as the recommendations go, I think that the appropriate thing to do is look at the totality of circumstances and see what the agents actually do. And what they do is this. Take, for instance, the five offenders. Offender one, they order to participate in a secular program. Same with offender two, three, and four. Each of different secular programs. The fifth, they say, I think FaithWorks would work well for you. Would you like to go? I won't make you go. If you want to go to a secular program, we'll make one available for you. Looking at all of that, it would be impossible for a reasonable observer to conclude that by saying, would you like to go to FaithWorks, that that's an endorsement of faith-based institutions or religion in general. Plus, the record does support that the only basis upon which recommendations were made were on non-faith-based aspects. Statement of Fact 75, Judge Ripple, as you have pointed out, evidences that the Department of Corrections has made recommendations to FaithWorks for people they know are interested in spiritual aspects, but does not indicate that they did that, that they made that recommendation because of that aspect. But even having said that, even if they made the recommendation because they understood that the person had an interest in spirituality, that they believed that that would assist them in recovering from their drug or alcohol addiction, I don't think there'd be any unconstitutional aspect to that. Because at the bottom is always the voluntary nature. You don't have to go. And considering the totality, that with respect to secular programs, the state gives a big bear hug to those by ordering people to attend those programs, but distances itself from FaithWorks by simply suggesting that they go and assuring them that they have no obligation to attend. I think that establishes that there is no possibility that a reasonable observer would view this as an endorsement, nor in fact would it advance or promote religion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you.
Mr. Bolton, you ran out of time, but if you'd like a minute for rebuttal, you may have it. I know you did. That's why I'm offering you another minute.
These are the things I know from the Supreme Court's decisions on the Establishment Clause, including Zelman. I know that the program has to be neutral. I think we all agree with that. What we don't know is whether or not neutrality includes affirmative recommendations of the faith-based program as the state's recommended choice. That's one of the issues here. But I know that the program has to be neutral. It is our position that you can't get much more unneutral than making affirmative recommendations of the faith-based program. In terms of the issue of comparability, whether or not there needs to be some level of comparability. Again, the individuals in this case are given a choice between A and B. We are told that in all material respects, A and B are equal, except A has faith-based, and it's 9 months to 12 months, and B is 1 to 3 months. If I'm making a choice and all other things are equal, I think I know that 9 to 12 months is worth more than 1 to 3 months. And so, again, going back to the issue of neutrality...
But they can't be penalized for offering a better service. That seems bizarre.
Well, I think, of course,
what's essential about the voucher case and which disturbed the, what disturbed the dissenters is that the Catholic Church has been much more active in sponsoring primary and secondary education than any secular group.
But in that case, there was not a situation where everything was available as an option. And Judge Justice O'Connor found in her concurrence that there was no evidence in the record that any option that a parent wanted was not available to them.
But you said if they just provided objective recommendations based on if they graded the schools and published the results, you wouldn't have any objection to that.
I think we go down a completely different road as soon as we say that with your vouchers, in addition to as long as the parents make a voluntary choice or the individual to receive alcohol or drug and alcohol counseling, as long as you make the final choice and there's no coercion, the government can make whatever affirmative recommendations or promote it in however it wants, and that affirmative or that choice negates any appearance of endorsement. If that is the case, then we have eliminated part of the test in Zelman, and that was neutrality. And you cannot read Zelman without...
Well, so you say you can't make recommendations.
Pardon?
Can't make recommendations.
I believe you cannot.
Cannot. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Both sides. Next case.